Acts chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. This is a beautiful passage, and I want to look at it with you just for a few minutes, and then we're going to anoint Sister Bernice and may anoint some other people, but let me read this to you. Now Peter and John went up together to the temple at the hour of prayer, the ninth hour. It's about 3 o'clock. I think the Jewish day started about 6. When you see in the Bible where it says the sixth hour would be noon, ninth hour would be 3 o'clock. And a certain man lame from his mother's womb was carried, whom they laid daily at the gate of the temple, which is called Beautiful, to ask alms from those who entered the temple. Who, seeing Peter and John about to go into the temple, asked for alms. And fixing his eyes on him with John, Peter said, "Look at us." So they gave them his attention, expecting. So he gave them his attention, expecting to receive something from them. And then Peter said, "Silver and gold I don't have, but what I have I give to you. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, rise up and walk." And he took him by the right hand and lifted him up. And immediately his feet and ankle bones received strength. And so he, leaping up, stood and walked and entered the temple with them, walking, leaping, and praising God. It's a great thing, isn't it? I don't think I'd notice that. Remember the lepers who Jesus healed and they all went that way? And then one said, "Oh, I better turn around and go thank Jesus." But Jesus says, "Where are the other nine?" Interesting. I had noticed that when this guy gets up, the first thing he does is goes and he worships God. There's a sermon there. Figure this out. And all the people saw him walking and praising God. And then they knew that it was he who sat begging alms at the beautiful gate of the temple. And they were filled with wonder and amazement at what had happened to him. There's lots of different kinds of lameness, and the Bible says that this guy has physical lameness. And there would be, I guess, a lot of characteristics if we said, what does it mean to be lame? That list would probably be long if we started walking or working down the list. But I think there are two key factors of what it means to be physically lame. The first is that you're certainly not going to be able to run. You're not going to be able to move as others are moving. You're not going to have the ability to go very fast. And secondly, you're not going to be able to carry anybody. I think if you're lame, you're not going to be the guy helping a lot of other people get to where they need to get. I mean, you know, if you're gripping a walker, I'm not going to be able to carry you, or I'm not going to be carrying somebody else. If I'm the one gripping the walker. So my ability to move at a good pace, I mean, my movement's going to be a real struggle. And as far as helping other people in terms of carrying them, I'm just not going to be able to do it if I'm physically lame. And when you think about that, there's then a lot of different kinds of lameness. There's lameness of the body, but there's also emotional lameness. And one of the things that people who know what depression is like, they know that feels like you're emotionally lame. When you're depressed, you're not moving very fast, and every day is a struggle, and you're not carrying anybody else emotionally. You're having to take. You're not really able to give. And if you're married to somebody who is depressed, as my wife has been from time to time, it's a tough thing because you're not getting anything else. And when if you're in that place, you're relying on the people around you to do everything. You're trying to function, but that's all you're trying to do. And there's a sense in which that would be an emotional lameness. A lot of different kinds of lameness or handicap. And yet, here's this man, and he recovers, he's healed. And I think I should probably just say this. Everybody probably is lame at some time in some way. I mean, we get injured. We have broken bones, but we have emotional brokenness. I mean, we do have to bury people that we don't think that we could ever live without. We do have disappointments, and we do have what would be considered disasters in certain areas of our life, and we are not going to be moving very quick, and we're not going to be carrying other people along the way. Again, Isaiah will talk about, I think, three different seasons of life. You can soar with the wings of eagles, you can run and not grow weary, and you can walk and not faint, and sometimes all I'm doing is walking. Sometimes even the step I'm taking has a limp in it. That the key for a Christian is not to sit down and not to quit. The key is to keep moving, although I feel very limited. But the day will come when I'll soar if I'll keep walking, if I just keep walking. But you look at this man, and here he is. And I want to point out four things, because he is healed. He gets a renewal in life. And I think there are four things that you could point out, more than four, but I'm a merciful preacher, and I'm going to give you four. And the first is that you have to have the right disposition. You have to believe that you can be healed. And I know that's a small thing, but that's the foundational issue, even when we talk about faith. We're back to where Jesus is looking at the guy at the pool, and he's saying, "Do you want to be well? Is this what you want to be, or do you believe that you can be well? Is this something that is possible in your thinking? Would God be big enough to heal you? Have you got that much faith? Because that's a starting point." And I don't know that everybody is there. Maybe this guy isn't there. I think when he witnesses, after he's walking and he's talking to somebody else, now he's able to tell him what he should do. But maybe he's not even there at this point. But foundationally for us is you have to believe that life can be different for you, that you can be saved. If there's an addiction, can you be delivered? Can this be taken care of by Jesus? Can he heal you of this addiction? And again, I look around. I don't know that everybody sees God as being big enough to help them. I think a lot of times we just quit, and we look at our life and say, "This is my life, and this is as good as it's going to get." Maybe we're right. Maybe we're wrong. But we have to think beyond where we are. You drive around Greenville these days. No, I moved to Greenville 9 years ago. I didn't see a lot of homeless people in Greenville 9 years ago. And in the last year and a half, 2 years, I mean, there's a lot of visible homelessness. And I get that this is a problem, and I get that this is, I think, if people move in, more people move in, it's going to be a bigger problem. And I haven't looked at all of the factors, but I think the big factor is, in Greenville, you only have so much public housing. We're not an urban center. There's not a ton of public housing. And again, I'm not sure about Tennessee, but in North Carolina, if you had a significant criminal rap sheet, you couldn't get into public housing anyway. And so that's why trailer parks are always a bit dicey, because a lot of people would be able to get into public housing, but the people who couldn't do that could grab a trailer somewhere for $400 or $500, and so a lot of the trailer parks were filled with people that couldn't get into public housing, and so there's a lot of criminal rap sheets down there, and that was good, sometimes it's bad, it is what it is. But what you're having, I think, as the economy, as people move in, housing prices go up, and maybe it's just not people moving in that are driving the housing prices. The folks who could grab a single wide for $400 or $500, that single wide's $1,000 now. And that's going to create a real problem, because if you're making $3,000 a month, I mean, if you're making $5,000 or $10,000, an extra $500 a month's a lot of money. And that's going to create this bubble. And so I think we have to be very understanding of people who are in a bad situation and are trying to get out of that. But having said that, you look at the people standing at the stop sign every day. It's like, have you given up? Is this it? I mean, you're economically lame. You're not doing a lot. You're moving slow. You don't have the money, and you're not helping anybody. You don't have any money to help anybody else. So you're not caring anybody else. You're sort of laying here, and is this it? I mean, is this what you're going to do for the next 20 years? Until somebody finds you laying under a bridge dead. I mean, I look at folks, and it's like, you know, boy, my heart goes out to you. But if your disposition is that this is all that my life will ever be, I don't think anybody can help you. Anybody can help you. Can it get better? I think that's a question, and my heart goes out sometimes to married people who are just, nobody here is like this, so I can talk frank. They're in a marriage, and unfortunately, it's just a bad marriage. It is, and particularly if there's mental health disease in the marriage. That can be rough. Because at least one person in the situation, they're not discerning reality. And my wife and I were sitting in bed last night doing what we do. We were watching, and it's what white people do when they sit in bed at 10 o'clock. They watch murder mysteries. They want to see somebody get killed, and they want to see somebody get caught. And so this guy had was in college. He drove down to the coast in California, down to Orange County, and he shot his mom and his dad, and he shot his brother and his sister. And so you're sitting there, but it's just amazing as you listen to people say, why do you do it? Why do you do it? I mean, was it for money, or was he mad at his parents, or why do you do it? And it's like, no. He had extreme bipolar and probably had some stuff on top of that. He hadn't slept in 4 days. There isn't a sane reason why he did it. I mean, it could have been, you know, I think I'll be happier if I live around clowns. I'll kill them all, get the money, and buy the circus. I mean, it's some crazy, unrealistic. It's, you know, his father hugged his sister, and something went off, and he thought that meant his father was abusing his sister, and he went home and shot the whole thing. I mean, there isn't a discerning of reality here. And it's very hard when somebody's living, and you're looking at them, and I got to live with you, and I wonder what color the sky is in your world, man, because you're not living in this world. And that's difficult. But again, if this marriage is going to be any better, the people involved have to say, there's hope for us. God can do something in this marriage. There's a path forward for us. That's the disposition you have to have. As Zechariah would say, you have to be a prisoner of hope. I'm a prisoner of hope. I think that's Zechariah chapter 12, verse 9, 10, or 11 down in there. And so, what's your disposition? Second of all, how strong is your desire? Because again, here's a man, and if we can get inside of his mind, what he's probably thinking is reasonable. Here he is. I have been lame. I was born lame. This is a birth defect I'm working with here. There's how he was born, but there's also what he became. Now, if we could see him, if we had a picture of him, we could be more exact in how we're talking about him. But, and so this may not apply to him. But just because you're born lame doesn't mean you have to be an invalid. There are a lot of people who are born with birth defects that nevertheless, it's difficult. It's not easy. But they're able to drag themselves along. Maybe they're born without a hand. Maybe they're born with club feet. And it's not easy. It's not easy. But they don't turn into invalids. So there's what he's born with. There's what has happened to him because he doesn't have a desire to be anything more than he is. So now he's an invalid. He has muscular dystrophy. He can't walk at all now. And again, it's a very sympathetic case. We get how he was born, but it's not all how he was born. It's what he did with how he was born. And he didn't have the desire to push through the handicap. Now, again, maybe he was born and his legs were so twisted that that wasn't an issue. But for a lot of people, that's the way it is. And again, you have to say, first of all, God can do something with what I have. This is not beyond the power of God, but I have to have a desire. I have to really want to be healed. I want things to be different in my life, in this marriage, in my future, in my family. And granted, I might have been born with issues, but those issues, by God's grace, can't define my life. In spite of this handicap, I have to maximize my potential with the help of God. And again, that doesn't mean we're not sympathetic. I am perfectly convinced to believe that there are people who are born with a tendency towards drug addiction. I think that there are babies who are born to addicted mothers, and you see the behavioral issues from the get-go. I'm convinced that there are people who are born with a bent towards alcoholism. That seems to run in certain families, and there's science that suggests that. I believe that there are men, maybe women, but I've been in locker rooms, male locker rooms, when I've been in female. I've been in female locker rooms. I've been around the men, and I'm convinced that there are men that are born with like testosterone levels that are off the roof, not off the roof, but to the roof, and are off the charts, and it's like, I get why they have the struggles that they have in the area of sexuality. I mean, they're just born with this libido or whatever you call it, and it seems to run early. I understand that. I get that there are people who are raised in difficult home environments. I mean, I think all of us can look at situations. I mean, we may not verbalize it, but we look and we say, boy, that kid has a lot to overcome in life. I mean, he's born in a situation where he's not getting what he needs. Nobody's helping him with his homework. He's sent to school without, a coat. His mother and father are partying, and he comes home, and mom and dad may not be there. They may not show up that night. He's got to get up in the morning and get himself to school. I mean, you look at the situation and you say, I get why that kid is going to have a tendency to struggle. That kid is starting way back. I mean, this is not a kid who's going to have things given to them. This is not a kid who's going to have tutors. This is not a kid who's going to feel loved at home. I mean, this kid is going to grow up, and unless God sends people into their life, they're going to be 16, 18 and not know what it feels like to be loved unconditionally because they don't have that in their home. And you got to give a lot of grace to folks like that. You and I don't. If you've grown up in a safe, if you've grown up in a safe environment where you could go to bed at night and know that you can sleep without being interrupted or abused, man, what a great gift you've been given by your parents. And a lot of kids don't have that. And so, in many ways, there's the handicap of that environment. But again, if you look at your life and say, well, I started so far behind, I didn't have any of the advantages, I'm just a lame man walking, I'm just lame, and nothing can come of my life, well, then nothing's going to come of your life. Nothing's going to come of your life. You have to believe that God can help you and that He is a rewarder, the Bible says, of those who will diligently seek Him and trust Him. And He can take the most messed up ball of clay and He can turn it into a beautiful life when it's all in His hands. You got to believe that. The disposition, the desire, and then you've got to have the right direction. Because Peter says, look at us. You're looking at the ground. You're looking at the ground. Look up. Look at us. Because we're going to say a name to you that you got to hear. Look at us. In the name of Jesus Christ, get up and walk. Now that's the direction. And healing in life comes when you recognize the source of the healing, and that's Jesus Christ. Christianity doesn't go in for self-help. I mean, listen, my life apart from God, the best I can do, as Dr. Locklear would say, is jail. The best I can do is messed up. The best I can do is dysfunctional. That's the best I can do. I don't need self-help. I need help outside of myself. The Christian answer is not to look deep inside. Again, in our culture, you have people saying, well, I'm going to find myself. All you're going to find in there is more dysfunction. You got to look outside of yourself. The hope comes from out there. Sin is a cancer. What we're struggling with is a cancer that's going to not just kill us, but it's going to take us to hell. It's going to keep us from God. And the cure for cancer isn't in there. It's got to come from outside the body, inside. And I mean, you can sit there at the side of the road, and he can sit there and say, how am I going to... There's got to be an answer. If I look deep enough, if I talk to enough experts, I can figure this out. No, you need power that comes from Jesus. I like how Charles Spurgeon was that great preacher in England. And he was saved off the verse in Isaiah 45:22, which says, look to me and be saved, all the ends of the earth. For I'm God and there's no other. And Spurgeon, I want to say this in his words because he was just a wordsmith. He had gone into, it was a little church, and he set up, I think, in the balcony. And there wasn't many people there because there was snow outside. It was London. He'd walked to church, and it was a snowy night. And he said, the preacher preached. And he said, as the preacher preached, he painted such a picture that I could see Jesus hanging on the cross. And then he looked up at me, and he said, and this is Spurgeon's words, he says, that young man up there looks very miserable. And he pointed at me. And he said, there's no hope for you, young man. There's no hope for you, young man, or any chance of getting rid of your sin but by looking at Jesus. And he said, there wasn't an altar call that night. Service ended, and he said, I walked home in the snow. But he said, everything had changed in my life. And he said, it seemed as if all nature was in accord with that blessed deliverance from sin, which I had found in a single moment by looking to Jesus Christ. And when we talk about looking to Jesus, what are we saying? I'm weak. I'm helpless. I can't save myself. There's nothing good inside of me. I've looked. Nothing good in there. And if you don't save me, I'm lost. I'm hopeless. I'm powerless. I can't change my life. I can't help myself. what I need is power, and that's got to come from you. Will you save me? Will you deliver me? Will you cleanse me? Will you help me be the person you created me to be? And you got to say that sincerely. You got to say that with the right disposition. I'm putting my, it's not a lot, may not be a lot of faith, but all the faith I have is in that. That you said it and you can do it. And my desire is to have your power cut loose in my life. Right disposition, right desire, right direction. Then very quickly, fourthly, you got to have the right dudes in your life. Dudes. Because here he is. and I like how he gets to the place where he meets Peter and John. Because every day there'd be some guys come along and they would just pick him up and carry him, put him where he needs to be. And I'll tell you from personal experience, you need the right people in your life. But what happened in this man's life, some people got him here, and then John and Peter got him to Jesus. But as Haddon Robinson would say, everybody who ever comes to Jesus has human fingerprints on them. Somebody got them there. I mean, somebody shared the gospel. So somebody witnessed, somebody invited them, somebody got them there. And then not only that, after they came to Jesus, somebody discipled them. Somebody helped them walk. Somebody got them going. I mean, again, a new birth is like a physical birth. You don't start out running. Even when you're born, you got to have somebody who can take care of you for a while. This is the beginning. And that's what discipleship is in the church. And the question then is, are you grabbable? I mean, will you let some people come alongside of you and grab you and help you walk? Or are you going to be the person who says, I don't need that class. I don't need that 12 step. I don't need any disciple. I'm fine. No, you're not fine. You got to have the right people in your life walking with you. You got to be open to that. Well, this man is healed. He walks. He begins to celebrate. He goes forward. And he becomes a trophy of grace in that town, in that temple, around people who need to see it and who need to hear it. There's hope for you. I love that passage. Where is that? Zechariah, I'm not going to ask Andrew to do anything. It'd just be a cause. Zechariah chapter 12, prisoners of hope. Be a prisoner of hope. Bernice, we want to pray for you. You got some stuff going on. Brother Brian, we'd like to anoint you and pray for you, but also pray for Kendall. And there might be others who want to come and be anointed. Maybe you just want to come and pray. But we're just going to believe together that what happened in Acts chapter 3 can happen for these folks. I'm going to believe that. I'm going to believe that. All right? Come on. There's anybody else who wants to be anointed? Anybody who wants to pray? You come as well. I got to find that oil. Okay.